I'm Jim Cullerton. I'm the artistic director of Fish Amble, the new play company. We started off as Pig's Back, and then after about 7 or 8 years, we became Fish Amble, and we've been dedicated to new plays ever since.
Hi, I'm Gavin Kostick. I am the literary manager of Fish Amble, the new play company.
We find plays in lots of different ways. So we have a commissioning policy and we commission writers that we really admire and would love to work with. And we also receive about 300 unsolicited scripts a year, which we read and process. And then we also talk to writers, and we have a number of training and development schemes as well that develop new plays that often become Fish Amble productions.
I was born and raised in Chester in the northwest of England, a beautiful city. My father is Irish Jewish. Raised in Cabra, he was a boxer. Then he became an embroiderer and a tour guide. And he emigrated in the 50s. I met my mother, who's a farmer's daughter from Devon, grammar school girl. And they became teachers, and they went to live where whoever got the first job, that's where they went to live. And my mother got the first job. I applied to 5 universities in England, and I applied to any university that had a cricket ground on the grounds that I could watch cricket all the time. So I applied to Trinity College, Dublin, and we were very ordinary children, and I would not have been able to afford to do it except for there was a grant system available because of a Northern Ireland thing. There was an English-Irish crossover that allowed you to come over. So I was able to go to Trinity College, Dublin, and study English.
My name is Pat Kinavan, and I'm from Cove in County Cork. As a young fella in Cove, I was very much involved with amateur drama and community drama. Probably one of the biggest amateur companies in the country were the Hall Boland Theatre Company. I worked with them for years and years. And then I left Cove because I was working for the civil service in various post offices all over the country. And everywhere I went in order to meet people and to socialise, I would join a amateur group. And it was fantastic. Places like Naas and Portlaoise and Dundalk and Wicklow. Along the way, I had a kind of a quiet passion that at some stage I would do it as a profession. So eventually I got a really good break from a man called Patrick Sutton, who was running a course in Gormanston in County Meath, and he gave me a chance to audition for a professional company. I did, and thank God I got the part. That was about 25 years ago. The part I got was in Team Theatre Company, and the play was called Dreamwalker by Anton O'Flaherty, and they were a theatre and education company who were amazing. They brought theatre to kids and teenagers all over the country, and we toured in a van with the set, 4 actors, and that was really a baptism of fire in a brilliant way for a performer.
So when I was growing up, I was familiar with these studios here in RTÉ Radio. It's always lovely to come back because I was in lots of radio plays growing up. I was kind of the boy that was called in for a few years until I was rung up one day by the producer, John Penrose, and he said to me, Jim, could you come and do a radio play next Wednesday? And I said, oh, that'd be great. And he said, has your voice broken? And I said, oh God, no, I think I just have a bit of a cold. And that was the very harsh, cruel end of my child acting career. And then I went to Trinity, where I studied drama and English, and I met Gavin there and got involved in Players and was chairman of Players. And I suppose while I was in Trinity, I got more interested in directing, I suppose, than in acting. And I suppose a lot of people, I think maybe when they grow up, think that acting is the one thing you can do in theatre. And it's kind of really interesting then to see that there are so many jobs and so many roles, and it's such a collaborative team effort, and there are so many different kind of elements to the creating theatre and making pieces of theatre. So I got more involved in directing. And then while I was in college back in the late 80s, myself and a gang of people from UCD and Trinity, including Ed Guiney, who's the film producer now, and Paul Hickey and Cathy Downs, the actors, and Fergus Linehan, who's now taken over as director of the Edinburgh International Festival, we all got together and set up Pig's Back, and after a few years then started dedicating ourselves to new plays. And the early plays we produced were first plays by new writers. So Gavin's first play, The Ashfire, was one of those plays. Michael West's first plays by Marina Carr. Then after a few years we produced Pat's first play, The Nun's Wood, and have gone on to develop and produce first plays by lots of other writers, Colin McCann, Belinda McKeown, Stella Feely, Joe O'Connor. And we got a play from Marco Rowe. It was his first play called From Both Hips, about a man who had been shot by a member of the Garda drug squad. Kind of a very both funny and very moving play. And indeed, Mark talks about how he was working in a video shop and he looked up the Yellow Pages to find out the names of theatre companies. That'll tell you how long ago that was. And I remember getting that and reading it. And sometimes people say, oh, what makes a play really special? And I remember reading that play and thinking, gosh, I've read the play and I'm laughing and crying at this play. And it seemed really special. So we kind of rung up Mark and produced his first play. And that's lovely when you can discover a new writer, which we tried to do through our Fish Amble First scheme.
My name is Marquetta Dowling and I'm the producer and general manager of Fishamble, the new play company. I worked in the film business for 10 years in Prague, in the Czech Republic. Many of the Hollywood productions were coming to the Czech Republic at that time because of the locations, and it was cheaper. I worked on films such as Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman and Heart's War with Bruce Willis and Colin Farrell. My first time in Ireland was when I came over to see the set of Tristan and Isolde in Connemara, and I loved it and it's still my favourite part of Ireland. I met my husband then as well, working on Tristan and Isolde, an Irishman. He swept me off my feet and we started going out together. We decided that I would move to Ireland because my English was better than his Czech. When I came to Ireland, I wanted to work in the film industry, but no suitable jobs seemed to be coming up. So I saw an ad by Fishamble, the new play company, and I thought I could give it a go and work in theatre. I went for an interview and I worked with the company ever since and really loved it.
The Irish Fire was really about my grandfather, a real man called Nat, and he was a cabinet maker. And about him was told a classic story. See, Jews weren't allowed into Ireland, I think, in the 30s, 40s. There was a problem getting into the country. So you get the classic story that he had jumped ship with his wife, Sissy, and the only thing he had was his box of tools. So he went to Dublin and he set up as a cabinet maker in Capel Street. And the way he did it was he made a portrait of Porrig Pierce out of veneers to show his skill. And he went to his bank manager and said, I can do this. So if you set me up as a cabinet maker. And then he had three sons, one of whom's my father. Now, the play is a fictional version, but it's really about that key decision of how much do you integrate, how Irish do you become, and how much do you retain your own identity, and which brothers made which choices. So the three brothers were really central to the play, and it's who made which choice. And we did a reading in Dublin Theatre Festival one year with Jerry Stembridge and Pauline McGlynn were the main pair, Kathy Downs and Paul Hickey. And the year after, in Dublin Theatre Festival, it was launched as a full-length play. And then it toured, went to London and Edinburgh. And I got the unfortunate impression that all plays were like that. This would be my life. I would simply write works of genius and they would tour. It wasn't quite like that, but that was the initial start.
I was very lucky that a brilliant actor and mime called Vincent O'Neill gave me a scholarship to the Oscar School. Out of nowhere, I was so thankful to him, and I used to train at weekends. I used to travel up from Nice and train with him. Vincent had trained with Marcel Marceau in Paris, and he passed a lot on to me. From the other side, I also trained with a man called Rowan Tully, who would have trained with Jacques Lecoq in Paris. So I was getting a kind of stereo mime, really, from both sides. They gave me a chance to develop my own sort of movement, and it stuck with me all the time. It's still the basis of a lot of what I do, as well as dance. And I found over the years that I really enjoy the whole physical nature of theatre, as well as the academic side of it and the word side of it.
Now I work as a dramaturg at Fishamble, so one should always be suspicious of foreign words. So that's a German word. It means drama works, and it's basically some sort of idea how drama works underneath the words, like what is going on. Some people have compared playwriting to giving birth, to childbirth. I've seen my wife give birth twice. I'm quite proud to say it's nothing like it. They are completely unrelated things. I do think, though, developing a play is like a little bit like bringing up a child. You start by being absolutely convinced you know what's going to happen, that the child is going to play for Arsenal, they're going to be a cellist, they're going to tour the world, mountain climbing, that kind of thing. And then as the child develops, you go, oh, actually, this child wants to be this. My job is to facilitate that child to be the best child it can be. I think there's an analogy there with playwriting. The writer slowly starts to realise that they can no longer impose their will on the world. The work has to speak for itself.
I had an idea, a treatment for a piece, and I went to Jim and I said, this piece is called The Nun's Wood, and it's about a part of Cove that I used to hang out in when I was a child. The wood kind of represents, for me, a place that is protected by a religious order, and yet the whole place is steeped in pagan ritual. And I suppose it was a kind of my comment on modern religion versus pagan Irishness. Jim said, look, you know, give me a treatment. I gave him another treatment. And he said, there's something here, and keep going. And he encouraged me and nurtured it. And eventually it came to full fruition in 1998, with the first production of it. And I was thrilled, and it went really, really well.
We're always really surprised and amazed in Fish shambles by the amount of creativity there is in the country and by the amount of really top quality writing that there is when we work with writers and deal with writers. We ran a project there over the last few years called Tiny Plays for Ireland, and we invited people from all over Ireland to submit short 600 word plays to us, and we expected to get maybe around 300 or 400 submissions, and we worked in partnership with the Irish Times to announce it, and we ended up getting over 1700 plays in from people. We got plays from all 32 counties on the island of Ireland as well as a dozen other countries, and we really felt very privileged. I think we felt that it gave us a snapshot of contemporary Ireland and a look at what people were writing about. And there were plays, of course, about the recession and about unemployment and about depression and a range of issues on people's minds. And then there were also quite a surprisingly high amount of very hopeful kind of off-centre plays that were really charming and beautiful pieces of work. So we ended up, in fact, deciding to do double the amount of plays that we had originally planned. So we produced 50 of those plays over two separate productions rather than just one production. And some of those tiny plays, in fact, a small little play about the Taoiseach and the Minister for Finance allegedly flipping a coin to decide on the bank guarantee, became a bigger play by Colin Murphy, which is Guaranteed, one of our current productions. And a small little play about a separated father confronting the principal of his children's school by Deirdre Kinahan has developed into a bigger play that we're also producing called Spinning.
There was a writing workshop and they came in. Marquesa arranged it in the Lab Centre, supported by Dublin City Council, and the writers came in, and it was hilarious because some of them were absolutely identifiable with the play, like that you knew when they walked through the door that that person had written that play, and some of them were a complete surprise. You're going, really? You wrote that? And we had a workshop with all of them, and they developed their play, and they had a second draft, and they went into production. And then what was interesting was when people started to come back, and that's where I suppose we started to kick in into, yeah, that'll be a really good one to chase.
I think one of the things about being involved in a new play company that's constantly commissioning work and working with writers is that we do have the ability and the responsibility to be current and contemporary. And I suppose through a project like Tiny Plays for Ireland, we got to see what was on people's minds and on the minds of the citizens of Ireland. And it created a lot of debate and public debate. And President Higgins attended the opening night of one of the performances. And indeed, then he returned to another Fishamble show, to Guaranteed as well, that similarly is a piece of political theatre based on documentary facts, and which almost acts as a kind of an unofficial banking inquiry, with the audience being like a jury that debates the issues afterwards. And I think that's something we're very proud of doing and are very committed to doing through new work.
Forgotten is a piece that explores four lives, four elderly people's lives between the ages of 80 and 100, and how they are connected to each other in some way, shape or form. There's Flor, and there's Eukaria, and there's Dora, and there's Gustus. And these people are all connected by a story that happens in 1943. But it's also about their lives now and how they're coping with growing old and coming toward the end of their lives.
One of the unique things, obviously, about theatre is the fact that it's live and you're performing it for audiences. I remember there was a campaign for theatre in general there in the UK, and their slogan was, "When did you last give your TV set a standing ovation?" And I suppose that's one of the great things about presenting theatre. And we're very grateful to be funded by the Arts Council and Dublin City Council and Culture Ireland when we're touring abroad and going around the country and around the world. It's really engaging with audiences in different places. That's such a rewarding part of what we do. We go to over 80 venues a year, touring like our half dozen productions in about 230 performances each year. And whether we're doing Silent or Forgotten, you know, in Inishere or Ballydehob or Letterkenny, or whether we're touring it to the States or Australia, I suppose it's the fact that people connect with an actor on stage that's most rewarding. And in fact, some of the plays that we've had most international success with, like Pat's plays Forgotten and Silent, and The Pride of Parnell Street by Sebastian Barry, and Sean McLaughlin's first play Noah and the Tower Flower, you know, those plays are so local and so specific to the place they're set. We sometimes wonder, how will people react and what will they make of it in Los Angeles or in Melbourne or in Paris or whatever? And actually, in the way that so many Irish writers have written about local issues and about people they know, you know, James Joyce and Seamus Heaney and Patrick Kavanagh, and so many Irish writers really writing about their own locality, that in that, I suppose, there is something very often that the truthfulness of that becomes very universal, and people, you know, people connect and associate with the plays. That play, Noah and the Tower Flower by Sean McLaughlin, I remember we did that in New York, and it was set in working class Dublin area, and a man turned to me at the end and said, "I didn't understand everything, but I sure knew those two people loved each other, and I'm off home now to my gaff."
I did used to go to theatre in the Czech Republic, but obviously film was where I was at. When you're working in film, I was working for anything between 5 to 8 months, and it would be 8 to 8 days, Monday to Saturday. So I had very little time. But outside of that, when I wasn't working, I would go to the theatre. But I did not have that much contact with the theatre world in the Czech Republic. It's really only here when I came to Ireland. I suppose the difference between working in film and theatre, for me, the biggest difference is that you get to see your work so much faster, so much quicker than in film. Because I would be working on a film and we wouldn't have the crew screening until a year and a half later. And that would be the first time that I would see what we actually shot, what we actually did. Whereas working in theatre, the play is on after 4 weeks of rehearsals. Even though we do work on developing the plays for about 2 years, once you start rehearsing, you know that you will see the play in 4 weeks' time. So it is very rewarding to see that your work is on so quickly. Because often in film, I would have forgotten half of the things that we have done a year and a half later when I saw it on the screen.
Physicality has always been very, very important to me in theatre. I've always believed that light travels faster than sound, and we make very, very bold and first impressions with our bodies first and then with our voices second. And I've always really kind of celebrated the fact that we are mad in our movement. Irish people have suppressed their movement to a certain extent, and but there's a lot of expression there that's untapped. So I really, really wanted to go on a journey with this, as I still can just about move. I just thought to myself, right, let's do it before you won't be able to, Pat. So a lot of the characterisation is actually aided and supported by the physicality and the theatrical journey physically and gesturally with the audience.
We've done a lot of site-specific productions over the years as well. A play that Gavin wrote called The End of the Road, directed by Louise Lowe. A play by Joe O'Connor called Handel's Crossing, about Handel coming to Fishamble Street to the Playhouse in 1742 for the first performance of Messiah. We staged that on the Jeannie Johnston boat, and a production called Whereabouts. And so I suppose we're always thinking about ways that we can connect with our audiences and ways that the audiences have a real experience. And in Pat's plays too, in Silent and Forgotten, there's a very direct connection with the audience and getting to know people in the audience, which is very much a part of what we try to do as well. In fact, when we did that production of Whereabouts, it was in the streets of Temple Bar, and there was one play in which a man was kidnapped and bundled into a car and driven off, and we were very reassured that the Irish public was a concerned bunch of people, because there were about 52 calls to the Gardaí reporting a kidnapping in Temple Bar, and luckily the guards had had a meeting about it and a memo had gone round. I think there was one guard who hadn't actually been there the day that it was discussed, and so when he got one of the calls from a concerned member of the public, he actually traced the registration plate of the car and traced it back to our production manager, and the production manager's apartment and neighbours were visited, and he had to go around and give them boxes of chocolates afterwards and explain that it was part of a play that was all above board. But it was good to see that the Irish public were engaging in that kind of way with what we were up to.
After working on Forgotten with Jim and the company, I was really, really, you know, completely blown away by it and overwhelmed by how it went. And then I was really surprised that there was another piece that came along. I wasn't expecting another piece to come along, and I told Jim about it, and Jim once more said, come on, just keep going with it, just keep writing it and keep, you know, giving me treatments of it. And he did, and it was a piece called Silent, and I knew from the start it was going to be called Silent. Really, I kind of messed around with a couple of titles, but Silent kept coming back and haunting me. And I went to New York City for the first time in 2008 with a friend of mine, Claudia Carroll, and she was always saying, come on back, come to New York. And I'd never had the opportunity to go there. I went there and I hated it, because it was like, it shocked me how many homeless people were there. And then when I came back to Ireland, my eyes were open, and I couldn't stop looking at homeless people. And then I started to talk to homeless people, and I was more curious about their stories and how each one has a unique story, and that there is no such thing as a typical homeless person. I wanted to like challenge the whole prejudice of it. And, you know, I'd overheard people, you know, around me kind of going, you know, oh my God, would that person ever get a job? Would that person pull their life together, without ever understanding what the person had gone through? Then I started to notice more and more how dispossession was growing, and how it was becoming a kind of an epidemic in the middle of a Celtic boom, you know, that people were still on the street. And then we just kept going with a passion, and Jim kept pushing me, and the company kept pushing behind me to bring Silent to a fruition. And I was just blown away that it actually came to a production, and we're touring that for the last 3 years now. Silent is about a man called Tino McGoldrick, who is a man that had what he thought was everything. He had his wife and he had his son, and I suppose he was content in his life. And then, I suppose, through a process of realisation and a process of circumstance, hitting him and his history hitting him, that he just loses everything and he ends up in the street.
The fact that Pat can tour forgotten and silent with a suitcase of props and the fact that Fishamble is able to help Pat to create and tour his own work in that way, I suppose, gave us the idea to try and help other actors do that. And so Gavin and Marquetta and myself a few years ago decided we would think about perhaps starting a scheme or initiating a scheme that would help other actors create their own tourable work and would serve the amount of wonderful venues that are all around the country looking for work for their audiences. So we've been working with the Irish Theatre Institute and the Dublin Fringe Festival to develop the Show in a Bag scheme that's this year's in its fourth year to help actors create their own work and provide that work for venues around the country.
Dealing with criticism, within Fishamble, what I do is I write a review of the play before it actually opens so that I say within the office, this is what I think we've done, this is what we tried to do, this is what we set out to do. And we set out to enable a writer to put a vision on the stage. That doesn't mean we think it's, everything is perfect or what. There is no perfection. There is only trying to do your best with work. But sometimes when I read criticism, there are assumptions made by the critic which they take for granted, which I don't think are valid. So, for example, to take one from a while ago, a critic might say that the playwright was lazy here. Now, I know they did six different versions of the scene that they're talking about, and I know they're not lazy, but there's an assumption there that they're lazy. And you kind of go, yeah, that's not a great thing to put out about someone. Now, I don't mind the criticism of the play. It did not work for the critic and they're trying their best to explain why. But the assumption that someone didn't bother, it's a very odd thing. So those are the things I watch out for.
I have no ambitions to be a director or a writer or an actor. And I think that's why we in Fishamble work so well, because I am hopefully good at what I do and that's what I want to do and that brings me a lot of joy. And that, I think, fits in our small team very well, with Jim as the director and the artistic director of the company and Gavin being the dramaturg and the playwright. So we all complement each other and we don't want each other's jobs.
Sincerely, I feel like really, really safe with Fishamble because I found a place and I found a group of people that I feel safe with. And therefore, if I feel safe, I can be more creative and more creative again. And even if I make mistakes, I'm still being creative. And something that really has concerned me over the last few years is that I have a tough old neck and I have got really bad reviews and critiques, and it's part and parcel of growing up as a performer. But I really, what concerns me sometimes is that I know people who have gone under and have never actually come back to the industry because of really irresponsible criticism. And I would just implore people who are in a position that, you know, that have that, and I respect their profession, but that they think twice, that it's somebody else's livelihood that they're dealing with. It's not just a play or it's not just a night, that sometimes just a little bit more responsibility could go a long way. And I mean that in a really loving way, and to protect people, because the mental health of a performer and a writer is also very, very delicate and needs to be treated with that respect. That's all I really want to say.